This is Tommy Thompson, recorded at Ardrossan, Ayrshire, on the 1st of October 2009 by Chris Eldon Lee. Tommy Thompson, Disc 2 of 3.
OK, Tommy, we can carry on again now.
Okay. OK. So I've just seen a glacier that looks a possibility. And it seemed wide and was curving round slightly. And so I made for this and followed it down. But as I followed it down, it began to get dark. And then it began to snow. And I had to be very careful, because as it curved round, it was coming up on my left-hand side as well. So, and as it snowed, the engine was taking some snow in, and it was going, every now and again, going poop, 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 poop. And at this stage, someone was being sick in the back, and the other one was being very quiet. And I wasn't telling them anything because I didn't know anything. Anyway, we followed this down and it got darker and darker until it seems as if we were just able to see vertically. Because I knew that this happens vertically in mist and stuff like that. You can see vertically, but you can't see ahead. But then the big snag was, as we left the glacier behind, I found by looking vertically that there were tabular icebergs that had been frozen in from the year before. And I thought, this is not going to be somewhere too easily. So I thought, what I'll do now, I'll keep looking vertically and still above the level of the icebergs until I think I've gone a fair way going right out without seeing one. And when I got to that stage, I turned round and went for the same time backwards where I'd come, and then turned again and went where I had been trying to find. And it came in, and the aircraft was brilliant. It slowly sank down and touched down. But unfortunately, something that I hadn't seen, but quite a small bit of projecting ice, pulled the wheel over, and the aircraft went quite slowly over on its back.
So the ski got caught on a lump?
Yeah.
And it flipped slowly?
Yeah, slowly, yeah.
What was your thinking at that moment? Do you remember?
Well, I suppose really what one thinks as a pilot is I've broken the aircraft. That's the first thing that comes. And you don't feel very good. But that was it.
Did you think it was it for you?
Oh, no. No, 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 no. Yeah.
The plane landed upside down.
No. Yeah. Oh, no, no. Well,
it flipped over,
yeah.
And came to a rest upside down.
Yeah, yeah.
So the plane construction was strong enough not to crush you.
Yeah, except the combination of everything, my not able to have found a completely sound place to land on. The bit of ice that I hadn't seen. And the plane, yeah, the plane was good. No, just me, I suppose.
Well, it's just bad luck, isn't it?
Yeah.
Why weren't you injured?
Because it went over gently.
Yeah, you're all strapped in.
Yeah, so...
But you were wearing a... I understand you were wearing a harness that had been devised by David Jones.
Maybe, I don't know. We never thought about it.
But you were held upside down by the harness. Is that correct? Were you wearing belts? Seat belts?
Never thought of it that way. Because you kind of tumble over it.
Yeah.
It's not... No seat belts or anything like that. It's designed to hold it upside down. So you kind of tumble over out of whatever is there. So I never even thought about that.
In the inquiry, the notes about the inquiry, it does mention that it was the harnesses that saved you from being injured. These were designed by David Jones, your engineer?
Yes.
And you were wearing them?
Oh, yes. But, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think actually it's going to be in the... Here we are, the public inquiry. Of course, I can't find it now, but never mind. Yeah. What happened next? There you were, and the plane had crashed, and it was presumably written off.
Well, not written off in the sense, in much of the sense, because it wasn't that kind of crash. It was much of a slower thing.
Yeah.
So if we had been picked up straight away, we could have done something about it.
Could have salvaged the plane.
Yeah, but the first thing that said, remember, snowing, the Reg said straight away, there is no point in our trying to stay with the plane because snow and snow and snow, we'll never be seen.
Covered up.
Yeah, we'll be covered up in no time at all. And it was agreed, the three of us agreed, that we would set up our tent. And next day, we would set out for home. That was as simple as that.
The crash was quite late in the evening, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
It was getting dark.
Oh, yes.
So you camped the night?
Yeah.
Without any serious injury?
Without any injury.
Yeah.
I think that would be... Yeah.
And the next day you started to do what?
Well, the first thing that we decided was, even before putting up, what did we have? And we had virtually nothing, because the Americans had had all the stuff.
And food, they had the food.
They had everything.
Mm-hmm.
They had, we had a one-man tent, and they had all the gear, setting up everything. But because they went there, we just had a one-man tent, and one sleeping bag between us.
Between three?
Yeah.
So what did you do?
With an inner and outer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we used one of the inner was one and the outer was the other, underneath and on top, for the first night and forever.
Yeah. And then you started walking home?
Yes, the next morning we saw that the cloud was right down the cliff faces. And Red says he roughly knew where to go. We will stay out from these ice cliff faces in case there's anything falling down and so on. And we will go roughly north.
Along the coast?
Yeah.
Yeah. On sea ice?
Yes.
Yeah.
Reg was a surveyor, so he should have known where they were.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did anybody come looking for you?
Well, we guessed they would, but they would. We guessed they would on the other side.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they did come looking for you.
Oh yes, but that's how they found us, because they were. The aircraft who was looking for us, thinking we were either the other side or dead. And in fact, they thought we were dead. But we heard a sound, a very faint sound. And we looked at each other. But we didn't think. And eventually, we saw the aircraft a long way away, curling up to gain height, to go over the plateau. And we had a red smoke flare. And the other two were desperate. Set it off. No, get it going. And I said, no. We'll wait until I think the pilot in one of his stands might be looking in our direction. And that's what I did. And that's what happened. So
they were spiralling upwards to go across to the other side, away from you.
Yeah.
So they'd be looking the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I had to wait till I thought was the right moment when he'd be looking ahead, just in his one of his turns.
This is the American team.
Yeah. It was Lasseter. Yeah.
And their flying conditions weren't terribly good, is that correct?
Well, no. We were on sea ice. And we knew what we were on. But when I saw this in one report, that there were adverse conditions, not...
Not true.
Not really. I mean, Jim Lasseter wouldn't have landed if it'd been... He landed with a lovely swoosh. Yeah.
You found a seal when you were walking back.
Yes, that was quite funny. When we were walking back at one stage, we had one container of food, and we were only having about the tiniest bit to keep us doing, a couple of little bits each day. And we saw a seal ahead. And Reg had an ice axe. And he went creeping up on the seal with his ice axe. And then he came back. And he said, I don't feel strong enough to do this. Because if I go and make a mess of this, it'll be done, it's blowhole in a flash. So I felt very angry, not with Reg, but about breaking up the aircraft, about this damn seal about whatever. So I said, give me this so-and-so exercise. And I went whooshing it and nearly took its head off. And then was exhausted. So the other two came up and they opened it up. And Reg decided it'd be a good idea just to keep the liver. And by this time I had recovered. And I said, right, I'll have a bit of the seal. So I had a bit of the seal flesh and ate it. And it tasted like, now, what's that soup that's all dark and horrid?
Mulligatawny.
Mulligatawny. Tasted like mulligatawny soup. And that was it.
Raw?
Raw, yeah. Yeah.
Were you suffering a lot on that journey? Tiredness, hunger?
Yeah. The thing that nearly did us, well, I don't know how the other belt felt, but anyway, I can remember quite clearly. About the fourth or fifth day, a storm got up, and it was a fantastic storm. And it raged for 3 days, and this one-man tent was coming in on us. We could feel it coming in. And then there was a moment when I felt the sea ice tremble under me, and it almost felt wet. And then suddenly, I mean, I felt then that this is it. I felt it was going down. But suddenly it stopped. Not completely. And I pushed out the side of the tent. And it was night. And it was nearly a full moon. And the wind was still fairly strong. And there were bits of snow, ice, but mainly bits of, I can see it now, bits of very thin splintered cloud going across the face of a full moon. And I pushed at the others. I said, we must get going. And we did. And that was the worst moment, the feeling of, yeah.
So there were some bad days, and the Americans kept looking for you, even though the weather had deteriorated.
I don't know. I don't know how they did it. But the time when we moved them, when we saw them moving, that one particular plane was going the other way. And I think they were, see, they also had that tremendous, tremendous gale. So they couldn't fly. But the bit that was most wonderful was the day after we were picked up, another gale got up and blew the whole damn thing about, out. So
the ice.
Yes. So we would have gone with it.
So
yeah.
In the report it says no praise can be too high for Lasseter and Adams, who flew during the 8 days in weather conditions which could only be described as impossible.
Yeah. Well,
is that correct?
I'm sure it would have been, because they were pilots too.
And just going back to the previous point about the safety harness, the Sutton type safety harness which Jones had fitted to the pilots and co-pilot seats saved Stonehouse and I from any injury. This must be you that wrote this, I think, in 1947. So there was some sort of safety harness which
Probably, you know, as we say, when you've got anything on, the fact was that they weren't injured in any way.
Looking back at that episode, quite a serious episode, what went wrong was the Norseman delaying its flight to meet you. Is that right? Before the accident happened.
Yeah. I would say that the fact that the Americans didn't come, and my aircraft was fine. It had plenty of fuel. There was no nonsense at all. We were asked to wait, and we did wait, and I didn't look at it and say, I'm short of fuel, I must get back. It was fine. So the fact that they couldn't come were...
Did you ever get to the bottom of why they didn't turn up earlier?
No.
For 3 hours late and turning off, it says in here.
Yeah, but why would... You never found out why they were...
I asked no one, for the simple reason that Jim Lester came and picked us up.
Right, so you were very grateful.
Yeah.
And there was a problem with the frequencies. You couldn't talk to the American pilots, is that correct?
Yeah. We didn't have... Once we were over on the other side...
Of the
jetter, yeah. It wasn't here working at all.
Right. So you were out of range, radio range?
Yes, we had, shall we say, something like 6,000 feet blockage between us.
So it wasn't the frequency that was wrong, it was the fact that you just couldn't get a signal?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Did that change your attitude towards flying?
Yeah.
In what way?
I said to Jim Lester, this is my last flight. I'm not going to fly again. And he, Jim Lester, said, well, you don't come on this, then, Tommy, are you willing to come back on this flight?
And you did.
Yeah. Did he ever pilot a plane again?
Yes.
You did?
Yeah, when I was nearing my time in the... Yes, ending my time at all. See, I ended up in flying, not in flying, in being I think this might be a good time to stop.
Let's take a break. All right, thank you, Tommy.